Okay, hello everybody. This is the Lumpen Kulturati podcast. This is the first episode I'm recording for 2014. And my guest for today, and I'm really fortunate to have him on, is Dean Alfar. Hi, Dean.
Hey.
Okay, so Dean is awesome. Yeah, no. I should have come up with a better intro. No? Dean is at the forefront of Philippine speculative fiction. I mean, when I talk to people who have been writing and publishing in the Philippines, the vision has always been local success. You know, you win the local awards and you come out with a local book. But what I saw with Dean was that he had this vision for Philippine literature as something much larger than, you know, what was being consumed in the local scene. And Dean actually went out of his way and started forging a path. And I think it's because of Dean that there are a lot of Filipino writers that are getting anthologized in international works. Personally, I mean, without Dean leading the way in Philippine speculative fiction, I wouldn't have been writing. I don't think that my work would have been published. And Dean went through this, you know, the struggle of being Mr. PSF, right? I remember this. Dean went through this this period in his life where he felt like, you know, he was the persecuted man trying to forward this genre, right, Dean? And now he's like the
persecutor.
Dean now gets to decide what Philippine speculative fiction is. Dean established the Philippine speculative fiction series that is on how many years now? Is this the 10th year?
Yes, we're entering our 10th year.
Right, so it's a decade of it, and I really think that it marks the beginning of this movement. And I know that we could go on and on talking about what speculative fiction means and all that, but that's another conversation. Today, we're talking about Dean's Six from Downtown, which I recently taught in my non-realist fiction class. And because
is that what you call it now?
Yeah,
non-realist.
Man.
Okay.
What we do in UP is it's called CW111, and 110 is realist fiction.
Okay.
And 111 is non-realist, okay. Which is everything else. I know this is what it was when I was there. It's just either it's fiction to advanced fiction or non-realist, non-traditional, which is everything.
That's fine.
Right. And so Six from Downtown is a collection of vignettes, or if you take them separately, they're short shorts, but together they sort of build this urban fantastic landscape. And and I guess the popular conception because of films is your fantasy is, you know, your high fantasy, your Lord of the Rings, your Narnia, or now the most popular high fantasy thing is Game of Thrones because it's on TV, or you have your Harry Potters. But here we have this very strongly physically located story, and this story that examines Philippine culture in these various aspects. I was wondering, so the first question is always, where did this story come from? How did it start out?
It was because of a storm, and I was stranded in Dumaguete. Mm-hmm. I had gone there to attend an event, and I was booked to leave, and then the storm came. So I had to stay until it passed, which ended up costing me another 2 days. Okay. So while I was there, I decided to do what all writers should do. Okay, and I wrote. And I came up with Six from Downtown. So I wrote it in a different order, mm-hmm. and it was only later when I started to structure it. But I do remember writing the first one, the Wet Market. And I wanted to, of course, because I'm a fantasist and I write spec fic or speculative fiction, I wanted to throw in the sense of the strange, sense of the weird, the peculiar. But more importantly to me, I wanted to provoke a sense of Filipino nostalgia so that it would bring people to that certain feeling, because certain stories succeed when they're emotive. Certain stories succeed because they operate on the realm of the idea. I wanted sort of a marriage of the two. So for each of the six shorts or vignettes, I wanted to focus on a particular feeling, not so much a theme, but a feeling, and then contextualize it in a Filipino context. Because certainly while feelings are universal, our approach as people is always individual. It's always unique. So when I wrote, for example, the wet market, I put myself thinking about how things change and how we always tend to look back with nostalgia,
right,
and how memory changes and how things were always so much better, and we'll always compare things now and then. And then I wanted to color that. And of course, the speculative element is it's a mermaid.
Yeah.
But you know what? You can substitute just fish.
Yeah.
And that's the truth of it. So I wanted to create something that resembled a truth of feeling. But of course, in my manner, which is the fantasy.
Oh, I forgot to bring in, for those who are interested in the book, they can pick it up on Amazon, Best of Philippine Speculative Fiction. Your Kite of Stars is also available in digital. And I guess a brief background on The Wet Market is it's this story about a woman who goes to the wet market, the palengke, and she buys a mermaid to eat.
Yes.
And so, but it's not just that. It's you're right. It's about how the world changes, how things seem to be, how we lose what was once good.
Yes.
You know, and it's this reflection on the memory and her interactions. It becomes also a meditation on family and how that shapes our approach of things. And what I was thinking about is, as you were saying those things, was that when I encounter people who are starting out in creative writing, the impetus is to write about white people in wizard boarding school.
Oh yes.
And it's the impetus to write about really good looking vampires now.
Yes.
Right. And what I appreciate from this is while it's fantasy, it is so distinctly Filipino in the things it uses. Right. You have there's this really strong story in the macho dancer.
Oh yes.
Right. And then you have the last story has a manananggal. But the thing about this collection is it doesn't drop these creatures in para lang, just so that we can say, oh, it's Filipino because it has the manananggal. But it uses like the separation of the manananggal, this being away, and it's incidental in the way that it's just a part of the story. It's taken as normal.
That was a deliberate act. I wanted it to have these fantastic elements, but the story is not precisely or only because of those things. And I think it makes for a more interesting read when you realize that there is much, much more. And the much more, the feelings that you get are deeper than just the cosmetics. But don't get me wrong, I love me some manananggal. Mermaid. Okay, they wouldn't be there if they weren't important. But I don't want something that's just there for the sake of or gratuitous violence just for that. So yes.
It draws on these tropes, these very familiar stories. So, for example, it's that person who misses a specific dish and they go and they try to find it again. There's this story about this girl who can't write, so she has this drama, and it's so familiar, especially when I was discussing with my students, oh God, it's these writers, and they're talking about how they can't write.
Yes.
Oh, poor you.
With other crazy ideas and highfalutinness.
Yeah, and all this, oh, I'm writing this big collection of poetry and everything. So it's that, and it's the macho dancer who's doing things for money, but he wants something else in life, and it's this couple who's having marital troubles, and they don't, you know, they want to have a child. It's these, and they're taking it out in their own ways. So it's very familiar stories, but it's that different take. And how did you approach that? How did you kind of come to those different ways in thinking about it?
When I begin thinking of writing a story, and just by starting to think I'm already writing, like many of us writers, while plot is to a certain degree important because it helps create the line of action, that isn't my priority. It is the character and to a certain degree the situations that they will find themselves in. and I want to unearth something of interest, something that makes us as people. For example, in one of the vignettes here, the call center gossip story, it's just two friends over coffee just trading stories. And for me, it's about how inured we can get to all these horrors, because I'm sure that you take a look at a tabloid newspaper, you'll see much, much worse.
Yeah, and then, so regular.
And regular. And then, you know what? We pick up a news item, we're like news cycles ourselves. We talk about it briefly and then we forget.
Yeah.
So we need things that, that remind us that these horror things, horrible stories, are horrible. And we should not lose sight of what makes it horrible, because we end up being less human. So I wanted with these set of stories in one to provide some perspective and just to show that these things matter as much as the fantastic elements.
I want to look at the structure of it now and how it's six stories, and then I had, some people will think, well, if you have multiple stories, it should be like Love Actually, where all of these things kind of wind up intersecting and everyone meets at a certain point. And I thought that would not serve.
But no.
How does this become one coherent short story if there's no linear progression and this structure? Because how did you decide to structure it, to make it?
When I realized that when I sat down to write a story, I did not just want to write one story.
Okay.
And I did not want to write six different long stories that are separate, but instead somehow they need to be together. I thought of place.
Okay.
And I thought of downtown Manila.
Yes.
And I realized that downtown Manila has its identity. You can say it's downtown or Makati or Caloocan.
Yeah.
There's a certain character.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to those places, you will see that there are different sub-places that each have different characters.
Yeah.
So you can have the housing projects where I decided I would set the husband and manananggal story. Guy goes out for a massage. There is the university belt area where you can have people talking about their school or collegiate dramas.
Yeah.
Okay. You can walk anywhere almost and there'll be a call center.
Yeah.
So I realized that if I take a look at the microcosm as a macro, what have you, all these stories are about the same kind of people, the Filipinos, who are living and breathing in today's age. And these are things that are reflective of, for me, their concerns, which it turns out is just the same as it was in the past.
Yeah.
Because we still care about, will we achieve? We still care about questions like, how will we earn enough money to buy what we need? We still care about our relationship with our wife or our family. And we still care about our past. So these things for me are indicative of who we are as a people. It's just that I wanted to break it down and create sort of like a mosaic.
Uh-huh.
And because it's my damn story, you have no choice but to read it as a as a cluster. So there, that's how.
Why that structuring, like this first and then this? Is there, like you said, wet market came first.
Yes.
Why put this before that one? What were the considerations made?
When I thought about it, my line of thinking was, do I set it through time? Will I start with a place that opens in the morning and my last vignette is at evening or midnight? So that could have been. Then I realized that, you know what, I'm screwed because my call center that doesn't operate with normal hours.
Yeah.
My macho dancer is there in the evening.
Most of it is at night.
And a lot of the stories actually occur at night.
Yeah.
So I decided that it would be something from something in such a public place, which is the palengke, the wet market, wherein you could be lost in a crowd but have your own personal concerns, but you're just a person in a crowded place. And I wanted to end with a man waiting for his wife to come home, and then they spoon or they're together. So something like big, small, big, because big concern.
Yeah.
small macro thing, something like that, just working it out.
You've been talking about this macho dancer story.
Oh, yes.
And I think it's, you only realize that it's fantastic at the end, and it doesn't even have to be. And I think that's one of the that's one of the strengths of this I think of this collection, is it doesn't have to be fantastic.
It doesn't have to be.
You will insist on that, and I'm wondering what contribution that has. Is it just because you like dudes with tails and manananggal and you know, magical word potions? Is that it, or is there something more to it? Is the fantasy essential?
The fantasy, actually, despite everything I've said, is essential, because I am a fantasist at heart, so I love creatures of the dark and fantastical things. But I do not want to write the usual kind of stories that involve these kinds of fantastic things. Mm-hmm. Although from time to time, I certainly do, because there's nothing wrong with that, right? But with this particular set, I just wanted them to be part and parcel of our daily life, our existence, so that it is sort of like a slipstream, if you accept that. So there is the everyday, and there is the odd things that come in once in a while. And in the case, for example, of the macho dancer with the bulge and all that, my friends who read it, when they were starting to read it, they were getting embarrassed, and they said, "Oh my God, Dean, are you writing sex, Dean?" So on. And then I revealed that the bulge is the tail.
Yeah.
And that's the sexy part, and there should be, if I were successful, a moment of But that would be the same if it were a penis.
Yeah.
Except that it's cooler, because it's a tail. So those things are important to me, and they are integral. Would the stories work without the fantastic element? I think so, but not as well.
And they probably wouldn't be your stories.
They wouldn't be my stories anymore, because this is the way I wanted to tell them. I wanted an inverted whirlwind. I wanted a tail. I wanted a manananggal. I wanted those things. I wanted to put words in soy sauce in a refrigerator. So. Mm.
When we're thinking about these divisions, and I had these students who were saying, well, maybe I think it's magic realism, and I think we fall into these pits where we're trying to divide among the fantastical writing. Was there this intentional move towards making the tone gritty and realistic? Because among your stories, this does seem the grittiest and the most like urban and...
First of all, as people, we love to sort things. We love to categorize things, because it's easier to understand and label. I'm certainly guilty of that.
Sure.
When I say, oh, this is that kind of story. So I don't mind people trying to compartmentalize. I cut my teeth writing with a sort of lyrical style. Mm-hmm. So, because words are so important to me. So I love the way they sound. I love vocabulary and structuring them. But you are correct. I felt a different tone would be appropriate for an urban kind of setting, without necessarily giving up my love for words, because there's still my vocabulary there and all that. But it's all in the tonality, so there is a certain different cadence, different thing. Because I like doing that, actually. If you take a look at various stories I've written in the past several years, I've been playing with tone, and I've been changing the way I tell stories, because it's important. It's all here, how you hear it.
Because I've been reading, you know, your stories for a while now, and what I found is you have this great, like, when you go high fantasy, it really sounds that way. And then with these newer stories in your newer book, it does have this intentional thing, but this becomes so different because of the urban focus of it.
Yeah.
And you're saying, like, this is our story. But one thing I've noticed is whenever people... Okay, if people write sci-fi, they're usually making it urban. Mm. And if people write fantasy, it's usually provincial, and it's usually in a different time period. You might say it's like pre-Spanish kind of thing. But here we have urban fantasy. Mm-hmm. We have the stories of the city put through this filter, and I found that one of the most engaging aspects of this story. And I'm wondering, what new what other stories do you see, or that you've read that you feel reflect this as well in Filipino fiction, or have you been seeing this kind of thing?
There, actually, for some time now, there has been a strong trend towards urban fantasy here, written by young Filipino speculative fiction writers.
Sure.
My only critique is it betrays their sense of entitlement and privilege because it's set in a Starbucks.
Yes.
So it's two manananggals talking in a Starbucks, or oh my gosh, right? So, but authors like T.J. DiMaccari will write a story about Filipino miners in space.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Or there will be stories by Paolo Cicchiamco about steampunk set in Muslim Mindanao.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that appropriate the urbanness without necessarily giving in to the mundanity, of how these things are done. And again, I do not necessarily blame the young writers because they model still. They read from abroad and they see the US stories where there are elves talking in Starbucks and they think that's the way. The other distressing tendency is to set everything in the provinces.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and I mean, come on. It's wonderful, but the provinces don't need to be so provincial in terms of the truth that they're always portrayed as backwater.
Yeah.
There are wonderful, wonderful things to discover in our various provinces. And we have, damn it, there are beautiful cities there.
Yeah.
Okay, you have Cebu, you have this place, Davao, and there are many stories that we can tell. The final distressing tendency is the Manila-centric mode.
All right.
Okay, wherein it has to be in Manila if you're going to write an urban fantasy.
All right.
So that isn't necessary and it should not be true because we have so many places here in our archipelago. Okay, but ironically, I set mine in downtown without saying exactly where it is. So it could actually happen in Davao or whatever.
Yeah, I want to run on this idea of the larger trends and these demands. And the problem of entitlement may also be a problem of the limitation of exposure to literature.
Like yes.
We were talking here, the mundanity. Why? Because when you enter a creative writing program, you're educated with the American short story.
Yes.
Right? The modern American short story where essentially nothing happens.
Yes. Right? Yes. Because it's all about character and some epiphany.
Uh-huh.
The sparkling epiphanic Jew, as Michael Chabon would say, rather than something else.
Right. And then at the same time you have that Western fantasy influence of elves and dragons and stuff.
True.
Right? And so there's the young writer trying to navigate. But I mean I get this sense, like this story like and forgive me for calling you older, but I mean this doesn't sound like a young person's writing. This really sounds like someone who's lived through the city and lived through issues
and
stuff.
In a sense that I would have to agree, because there are certain, okay, as a speculative fiction writer, you are always tasked to put yourself in some crazy situation, or not necessarily crazy, something that you haven't experienced. Yeah. But I found that to a certain degree, there is a bit of truth to write what you know. Although, in principle, I disagree with that because it goes counter to everything that spec fic is about.
Because, you know, but I don't know about frying eggs for my manananggal wife.
There you go, right? Okay, or having a manananggal, and how about that manananggal thing, right?
Yeah.
But by positioning experience that you have gone through in life, as well as talking to older people, okay, do not underestimate the power of talking to your elders and asking them how they felt about certain things in the past, because they can give you wonderful insight that you can, of course, rub them off and mine for your own writing. So for me, it was a combination of things I've gone through, things I've imagined, and things I've asked older people about, just to be able to construct these things that hopefully are good enough ally to be persuasive.
No, I mean, I think that the great thing about fiction, right, and the great thing about fantasy or speculative fiction in general is that ability to come up with something that does not exist in this world, but to give it the kind of emotional depth that makes it true.
Yes. While the situations portrayed are not true, the emotions that the readers go through, those are real.
Yeah.
Those are true, and that's important. That's why we can enjoy a time travel story if there's something emotive, there's something that is at stake rather than just for the sake of the time traveling. That's why we enjoy adventure, because it pumps our blood, right? So those things are important, how we accept it, how we feel.
Yeah, I want to look at something technical here, and it's the use of characters talking about something else, because that's usually, you're not supposed to do that. That's a rule. You don't have two characters on stage talking about another character as exposition, but we have one whole section there, the call center story, where you just have two characters engaging in chismes, in gossip, right? Or what has been termed as chimay speak for Philippine literature.
It's true.
Right? And how do you like work through that? Like, I'm breaking this rule. When you were writing that story, were you attempting to subvert the rule? Was that a conscious?
This is my philosophy as pertains to these rules. There actually are no rules. They're just best practice things. And if you can prove an odd case, the occasional odd case, that it is better not to apply the best practice and it works, then go for it. In my experience, when you eavesdrop at said Starbucks, from time to time you hear people talking about another thing that has nothing to do with either of them, because it is the nature of the gossip going through and being viral and being fast.
And then you eavesdropping, which adds an extra level.
Which adds an extra level, and I'm a fucking thief. Oops.
So
there you go. So in this particular case, I wanted to evoke the feeling of two people just talking, and then one is actually not talking, just listening.
Right.
So it becomes a narrator. So I have a narrator within a narrative talking about something, and it's a scary story. So I wanted that, and I wanted to get that sense of it. So yes, I broke the rules, because this person is actually not talking about herself or to the other person specifically.
Yeah.
But relating a cuento.
Yeah.
With the details.
Which is part of the tradition of this. It's an urban legend.
Exactly.
Right?
And we share these stories all the time, and we embellish them, and we create new ones, and we, to a certain degree, we believe them.
All right.
We believe them.
All right. So, guess maybe one last thing is this. I'm blanking here. When I talk to students and I tell them, you know, take off the headphones, man. You know, because if you're in the, like you were saying, if you're in the Starbucks and you're on your headphones, you can't eavesdrop. You can't get a sense of things. And maybe that sense of entitlement which we were talking about, or this lack of connection, is because of this unwillingness to engage. And if that's the case, I mean, what tips or what writing ideas can you present these people who are aspiring to write and who want to do something like this?
First of all, I would start with your advice. Take off the earphones, the earbuds. While you're at it, take off the blinders.
Right on.
It's all about being able to see and hear. Okay? Taste more. Taste different things, not just the things you like. Okay? Interact more, and not just on social media. It's so important that you get to hear and see how a person talks.
Right.
Experience more. Go out of your comfort zone without necessarily doing anything crazy.
Like YOLO does not equate research.
No, it does not. And you want basically to begin living,
right,
so that there is something that you can write about. Because you cannot write something that is convincing in terms of persuading people this is how you should feel or how you feel when you read my work, if you yourself cannot. So doing all of that, going out there, collecting experience, okay, that's just one. Because the second is to sit down and write.
Which is the hardest thing.
It's hard. And write and write and write and revise and revise and rewrite and then send it off to be published. If it's rejected, do not despair. Revise, resend, or begin a new story.
Sure.
So in essence, we need to live and we need to write and we need to get it out there. That has been my foundation. And I hope that that's helpful to others.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, Dean.
Hey, thanks also for having me.
And so you've been listening to the Limpen Kulturati podcast. This episode with Dean Alfaro on Six from Downtown. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.